Good afternoon. Welcome to Line One, your health connection on KSKA Anchorage. I'm your host, Dr. Thad Woodard. My guests today are Carol Fink. She's the manager of the State of Alaska Obesity Prevention and Control Program, and Cindy Norquist of an organization called Healthy Futures, which we'll learn more about shortly. On this edition, we're going to kind of discuss some of the efforts to prevent childhood obesity that have been going on in Alaska, and then we'll kind of look and see whether things have gotten better. And we'll look at the evidence for what appears to be some success in our headway in this state and across the nation in controlling some of the issues regarding overweight and obesity. If you've got comments or questions or stories you'd like to share with us, you can reach us during the next hour. Our number locally is 550-8433. That's 550-8433. Our email address is line1. You spell that out, all one word, L-I-N-E-O-N-E, at alaskapublic.org. And we also have a toll-free number, 1-888-353-5752. Well, Cindy and Carol, it's probably very few, if any, listeners are aware that obesity and being overweight is not an issue that is being discussed. There are always going to be people who might wonder if it's real or are we making too much out of it, but how did we get to this position? What's happened in Western societies that has got us to the point where we have to worry about this problem?
Yeah, well, this is Carol. Thank you so much for having me on the show today. There are so many factors that contribute to somebody's body weight, but on a big picture view, people are taking in more calories than they did three or four decades ago, and they're being less active, and that's contributing to the overweight. The reasons people are taking in more calories and being less active is what we're working on at the state, is to figure out how we can influence change through policy, environment, and individual choices to make those choices to be active, to make those choices to eat healthy, but also have the access to them and the availability to those options. So I think there's so many pieces that go in it. As we go through the show today, I'll bring up some specific reasons we're seeing an increase in obesity.
Okay. Cindy, you got anything you want to add there?
Yeah, I think one of the pieces that I would add is community planning, the importance of having sidewalks so that kids and parents can walk, and just promoting that physically active lifestyle.
So one of the complexities of that Carol has alluded to is it's not just individual choices, it may be community or national choices that relate in certain ways to where how we've gotten to our current situation.
Well, absolutely. I think, you know, one example is food marketing. The food marketing works very hard. They provide a lot of misleading information to individuals, and parents think they're making healthy choices because there's claims on the food about the vitamin content or the fiber content, and they think they're making the right choice for their kid, but it probably isn't the healthiest choice. And so there's so many, nutrition's so complex, it's hard for parents to get through that false and misleading marketing to make that smart, healthy choice.
What do we mean specifically? How do we define obesity and being overweight? And somehow you got to draw a line in the sand if you're going to measure how we're doing. How is that done?
Well, it's done by looking at an individual's height and weight, and it's a mathematical computation, and you come up with a flat number. And if your weight falls between, 25 and 30 of this BMI, body mass index, you're considered overweight, above 30, obese. And really what you're looking at there is health consequences. We're not looking at the cosmetic effects of obesity. It's like, where's sort of the tipping point for health consequences like high cholesterol, diabetes, high blood sugar, hypertension, those diseases? And really, when you look at individuals' weight at a population-based level, at about 25, that BMI of 25 is when you start to see those health consequences. And they go up exponentially as your BMI increases. So the BMI is really based as a proxy for health, not for a cosmetic definition.
So we use BMI, or body mass index, is a way that we quantify whether people are underweight, normal weight, or overweight. And basically, to have people conceptualize, that's how much weight you're carrying for your height, is basically in a simple way of thinking about it. So someone who is shorter and may have the same, you know, a higher weight or the same weight as somebody who's taller, their BMI might be higher. And that is, so the BMI gives you some correlation with consequences. It's not that everybody who has a high BMI is necessarily overweight or that necessarily going to have these things happen, but statistically, likelihood goes up as your BMI goes up of certain problems.
Absolutely. So at a population-based level, BMI is a very telling tool. At an individual level, there are many other factors that you would want to look at. So we say for an individual, BMI is not a diagnostic tool, but it's part of the package you would use when you assess somebody's body fat composition, their food intake, their physical activity, and then also look at all their family history and their personal health history to make a determination if that BMI is appropriate or not for them.
Mm-hmm. And we haven't talked about it yet, but activity level, Cindy, is something I know you're interested in very much. And so certain people with the same BMI may have different risk if they have different amounts of activity. Is that fair to say?
Yeah, I mean, that would be one factor. Mm-hmm. But of course, it's a complex issue.
Okay. I guess what I'm trying to get at is if you have a high BMI, it doesn't mean you should stop exercising. It probably means you should continue exercising or increase your exercise. It's not the cat's out of the bag, so to speak.
Yeah, there's some people that are always going to be falling outside those norms. So somebody who's very fit or has a lot of body mass from strength training may have a high BMI that puts them in an overweight or obese category. But like I said, it's not the diagnostic tool. It's looking at overall what's that person's overall health status that's important.
So again, just to say it, as your body mass index, as your weight relative to your height increases, your risks of certain problems start increasing. Those problems would be?
Like I said, a high blood pressure, high cholesterol, prediabetes, diabetes. People with high BMI also experience more joint disorders, hip replacements, knee replacements, and a whole host of emotional and social issues can go along with that. There's also even things like job discrimination that we see in obese people. So it's a whole continuum of health and then societal issues.
And once you, if you were unfortunate enough to develop diabetes, then the coronary artery disease, strokes, all that, it starts multiplying pretty significantly. And so it's clear that we are worried in this country and in all around the world as our BMIs as a group of people are growing up that we're going to have extra health care costs because of it.
Absolutely. We're already spending $460 million a year in Alaska that's attributable to obesity. 25% of the cost of Medicaid right now is attributable to obesity. And we're seeing those chronic conditions related to obesity increase and consequently an increase in medical costs as well.
Okay. All right. Well, let's talk about your organizations a little bit now that we've introduced the significance of the problem and the problem. Cindy, you want to tell us a little bit about Healthy Futures?
Sure. Healthy Futures was founded in 2003 by the late Bonnie Sosa and her husband. And the whole focus on that was how do we get kids more physically active? So our mission is to empower youth to build the habit of daily physical activity into their lives. And we do that through three programs. The Physical Activity Challenge, which is offered through the schools twice a year, and that's where kids document their physical activity. And although it is below the CDC recommendations, we ask kids to be physically active 30 minutes per week, three times per week for four consecutive weeks. And the kids then earn incentives for that. And the schools can also earn prize money so that they have money to buy equipment for physical education. In addition to that, we do the community events. We have over 42 community events that we offer support for throughout the state of Alaska. Many of those are free to kids. And the focus in the community events is that we really want to celebrate that last child that crosses the finish line as if they're the first. As we were discussing earlier, if you have fun, you're more likely to continue it. So that's what we want kids and parents to have at the community events is a lot of fun. And then our final piece is the role models. We want positive, physically active role models to interact with the schools, and we're able to do that as the signature program of the Alaska Sports Hall of Fame. We have the opportunity to access elite athletes from all different sports across the state and bring them into schools and also at community events. So kids get to see people physically active and making physical activity part of their lives.
Are all the schools, and when you have these physical challenges, that all the schools in the school district involved, or is it certain age groups or certain grades?
Our focus is K through 6. We never turn anyone away. Yeah. And our, you know, we would love every school to participate, but we're not there yet.
Mm-hmm. This year we've got 136 schools signed up for the Fall Challenge, and that's out of about 400 elementary schools across the state. So we've got over 25% of schools.
When I asked Cindy about the age group or they're addressing it in the schools, it's natural that it should be in grade schools first. Maybe not everybody understands that, but I've talked enough about how brains work. We learn very well. We don't unlearn, so we want kids to learn good habits early. So it makes sense to start as early as possible. Is that something the state is aware of as well, or do you guys think about it in that regard, or are you kind of addressing everybody?
No, we're definitely focusing our efforts on childhood obesity prevention. Mm-hmm. We know that 80% of obese kids become obese adults, and if we can prevent childhood obesity, we're going to be preventing adult obesity down the line. Mm-hmm. And so all of our efforts right now are focused on childhood obesity prevention.
So why is it that if you're overweight or obese as a childhood, it's so hard to change that throughout your lifespan?
I think you were just getting at it with that brain development. habits are very hard to break, and changing behavior is very hard. So if you set somebody up with good behaviors early on, they would likely follow that pattern into adulthood.
Yeah. It's a complex issue, this being overweight. I was never overweight till I got out of college and stopped playing athletics. But it certainly is true that that what we learn early in life can have long-term consequences. I use the example almost every day in my office that our brain is very good at learning, and I use the example, once you learn how to ride a bike, the rest of your life you're going to know how to ride a bike. But you can't tell me how to unlearn how to ride a bike. And so the point is, everything we see as children, everything we do as children, sets up some long-term pathways in our brain that are really always going to be there. We may learn ways around them. So we want to learn things correctly. And so starting off with being active and watching what we eat and having good nutrition makes a lot of sense. We've gotten to where food is cheaper, more accessible, and unfortunately higher caloric density than it used to be, and that seems to be part of the problem that we've got, as well as we're more sedentary. What's the state doing? What kind of activities are you guys involved in?
Well, at the state, we are in the process of building a comprehensive program, and we have several arms of that already. Healthy Futures is one piece of that. Healthy Futures provides that outreach program to schools and kids and families in communities across the state to help build that habit of daily physical activity. We've recently launched a school grant program, and 8 school districts across the state have been awarded grant funds to work on physical activity and nutrition in the school setting. The districts will have a coordinator who looks at their school wellness policies, looks at how physical activity is offered, when it's offered, and then is also going to be working with the nutrition departments to improve the school food environment for kids. So we're really excited. It's a 4-year opportunity, and we'll be doing a lot of evaluation to see what works in these schools. And when those schools have successes, we're going to share those with other districts around the state so that we can start to build an evidence base of obesity prevention strategies that work in Alaska.
Let me remind listeners, you're listening to Line One, your health connection on KSKA Anchorage. Our topic today is childhood obesity, specifically efforts to control childhood obesity in Anchorage. or in Alaska, I should say. Guests today are Cindy Norquist, who's representing Healthy Futures, and Carol Fink, who is the manager of the state's Obesity Prevention and Control Program. If you have any questions or comments, we're available over the next 45 minutes from now at 550-8433. That's 550-8433. And line one at alaskapublic.org is our email. Our toll-free number, 1-888-353-5752. You can always take a look at our website, which is at alaskapublic.org, and we have a number of links to today's program if you want to get more information about what the state's doing and some other resources for nutrition and exercise. You all are both out in the public, I suspect, quite a bit, talking to individuals. What's your impression of the public, how they're beginning to, are they beginning to understand the issue? What are their misconceptions, misunderstandings, things that you wish we all were doing better?
You know, I think one of the biggest misconceptions, which the state's Play Every Day campaign is really addressing, and that is that you have to have a gym membership in order to be physically active, or you have to be on a sports team in order to be physically active. And through the Play Every Day campaign, it's redefining physical activity as something that we can all do. We can have fun and we can play. I had an individual that stopped me that self-described herself as a non-athlete, and she wasn't a runner. But through the campaign, she realized she could walk. And so as a result, she started becoming involved in community events by walking them versus running them, because if you would have told her to run, she never would have participated. So when we start using the term physical activity, I think it's really important to make sure that we redefine it so that it's accessible to everyone.
One of the myths that I see a lot is that people think it's an individual responsibility, that people that are overweight or obese just need to push themselves away from the table and get out and go for a walk. And looking at it from a public health lens, looking at the population, it's not fair, because if you push yourself away from the table and you walk out the door and you've got traffic going by at 60 miles an hour, you don't have a safe place to walk, a safe park to play in, you don't have access to a grocery store that has full service, that is your local grocery store is promoting junk food and chips and everything's on sale. Then it's not an individual responsibility, it's a community responsibility to address, to make an environment where people have the opportunity to make that healthy choice if they want to make it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that always gets into these issues like, I can't remember Bloomberg's first name back in New York City. He wanted to make some changes in the community with the size of beverages, and you get into these issues that people feel like you're stepping on their individual rights and so forth. So it is difficult, however, to sometimes move communities along, I think, to a large degree, because we're not all on the same page at understanding where the issues are.
Mm-hmm. And I think, as Cindy mentioned, we have the Play Every Day campaign. It's playeveryday.alaska.gov. And we are helping educate the public about physical activity and how much physical activity is good for you. It's 60 minutes every day for kids. They need to get out and play. And through those efforts, I think we're going to see, or we're already starting to see, a shift in knowledge and in change. And I noticed earlier you just asked, like, does the public understand what's going on? We did some public opinion polling recently, and yeah, 90% of Alaskan adults know the risks of obesity. They know if you're obese, you're at higher risk for diabetes, high cholesterol, high blood pressure. They know what causes obesity. They know that drinking sugar beverages, not being physically active, sitting around watching TV contribute to obesity. So awareness is really high in the state. And what we're doing with our state programs is really trying to shift that knowledge into behavior change at this point.
Are there ways that are demonstrably successful at actually getting people to increase activity? We were talking before the program, and I was mentioning a prior podcast that I did that really hit me, and it's so obvious, it's not even funny, is that if you want people to do activity, they've got to find activities they enjoy doing. And when I was thinking about this is I know I need to get out and walk or run or do something a little bit more, and I don't enjoy either one of those, but I do enjoy playing golf. I never take a cart. I do walk. So it was obvious that you have to find activities that you enjoy doing with, and obviously, or I think a corollary of that is probably doing it with other people helps people to do things. Are those ideas that have been successful?
They are, and it's something that Healthy Futures looks at. You know, we don't want to just be an organization that supports running events. We look for family-friendly events. This year, we teamed up with Arctic Orienteering, which offers weekly meets. And it's an opportunity for you to get outdoors with your family. You don't have to run. You can walk, and you're exploring through the woods. There's also a cerebral element to it where you're, you know, looking at a map and basically finding your next treasure, if you will. And so we always look for opportunities to find different events because not everybody is a runner, and not everybody should be a runner. Mm-hmm.
So orienteering, tell me a little bit about orienteering. Maybe there's other people who are trying to figure out what exactly you mean.
Well, for more information, you can go to Arctic Orienteering's website, which is www.oalaska.org. This was my first year actually experiencing orienteering. And basically, you have a map and you have certain places that you have to go on the map, and then you get to document that you went to those places. Mm-hmm. And it's just, it's a fun way to experience the outdoors. You kind of get lost in the sense that you're reading the map, and so you forget about, you know, oh, it's raining or there's mosquitoes or you know, any of the discomforts. Instead, you're focused strictly on, okay, where is the next control?
Carol, do you think the public, and Cindy, I don't mean to exclude you from this, and you're certainly welcome to answer as well, do you think they also understand, well, the risks of being overweight? And I say that, again, from my understanding, from primarily doing this program, of how we're learning how the brain works. And we're very good as humans as finding reasons not to believe what we should be believing. Analyze our way out of those problems, that it won't affect me. I'm not as likely to have that happen. I've lived 50 years and haven't developed diabetes, so I probably won't develop diabetes. That kind of thinking.
There's definitely that going on. We've done some focus group testing, which is a qualitative way of looking at how people think around issues. And we work specifically on sugary drinks. And people understood that sugary drinks cause kids to be overweight, cause diabetes, rot their teeth out, aren't good for them. But then when we really got into the discussion about their habits, despite that they knew all of the health consequences, they still chose to serve their kids sugary drinks. And so we explored that issue, and I think there was a lot of "it won't happen to me" attitude behind the choices people were making. And so when you think of, you know, the stages of behavior change, it's kind of the scientific way of looking at how people make behavior change. A lot of people are in that pre-contemplative place. They're maybe contemplating it. What we want to do is figure out how we get to shift them into making a choice to make the change and realize, yeah, that could happen to me. It could happen to my kids, and I care, and I'm going to make a choice not to serve those sugary drinks in my house anymore.
Mm-hmm. One of the problems with this particular issue is understanding what you have to do to lose weight. If you're already overweight and you take in the same amount of energy you've always taken in, you're not going to lose weight. You got overweight by taking in an abundance of energy over what you needed. Do people understand that? And even if you understand it like moi, it is sometimes difficult because now you got to back off the calories or you got to increase the exertion or both. And you think that's well understood.
Once again, yes, if you poll people, that they understand that. But when it comes down to putting it into practice, that's where people are challenged by the doing the behaviors. And yes, you would need to do both. You're going to need to make diet changes, and you're going to need to make physical activity changes. That you think what a lot of people look for is a quick fix. They look to lose a lot of weight quickly. There isn't one. Most people didn't put on weight quickly. They put it on over time, and it's going to take time to take it off by making, you know, changing your lifestyle. Changing your lifestyle. So it does include daily physical activity. It does include eating real healthy foods. And I think some of those pieces are the big challenges that individuals are faced with.
Another thing we understand about change is we need to get some success, and and the more success we get, the more we build on it. And this is one of those where it can be a little tough to get those initial successes, often because we try to do too much too quick, I think, with diet anyway. And, well, I guess with exercise, I should say, too.
Yeah, that was one of the reasons that Healthy Futures chose 30 minutes versus an hour, because if you're completely sedentary, the idea of 1 hour every day, it's kind of scary. Yeah. So you start with little, and even if it's 15 minutes that you can start adding into your daily activity level, I mean, that's a positive.
We are close to halfway through. We're beginning to get some phone calls, and I've got an email. So I think this is an appropriate time for us to take a short break, and then we'll come back and continue with the phone call and the emails that we're getting, as well as seeing how we're doing in Alaska as we try to control this issue. Remind everybody again, you're listening to Line 1, Your Health Connection. Our local number is 550-8433. Our toll-free number, 1-888-353-5752, and our email address is line1@alaskapublic.org. We'll be right back, and we'll continue our conversation on childhood obesity with Carol Fink and Cindy Norquist. I'm Dr. Thad Woodard.
You're listening to Line 1, Your Health Connection from Alaska Public Media. The program repeats tonight at 9 p.m. on KSKA Anchorage and will not be taking phone calls. You can find Line 1, Your Health Connection on iTunes or listen at alaskapublic.org.
Welcome back. This is Line 1, Your Health Connection on KSKA Anchorage, and I'm your host, Dr. Thad Woodard. We're discussing efforts to address childhood obesity in Alaska with Carol Fink, who is the manager of the State of Alaska Obesity Prevention and Control Program, and Cindy Norquist of Healthy Futures. You can email questions to us during the next roughly 30 minutes now at line1@alaskapublic.org. Our local number is 550-8433, and our toll-free number 1-888-353-5752. As a typical reminder, if you're listening between 9 and 10 on Monday evening, you're listening to a recorded rebroadcast. We will not be able to answer your questions at that time. But I do want to remind everybody, you can go at any time to our archives of Align 1 at alaskapublic.org and listen to this program, have someone else listen to the program. You can tape the program for your own use, or re-listening to it at any time if you wanted to that way. So that's another way to share this, the contents of this broadcast with others. Let's go ahead and take a phone call as we try to address this issue of obesity in Alaska a little bit more. Mark, you're on line one.
Yes, hi.
What can we do for you?
I just want to make a comment. You don't see kids outside playing as much anymore, and I think they're so tied into their video games and just getting kids outside is a big step. And as far as food. You know, if you look at there's so many foods are processed foods these days, and if you look down the items, the ingredients on food, if it has a huge list of ingredients on it, from it, there's so much sugar in food. Everything's processed. Just trying to get away from processed food and just eating a lot healthier, and you know, getting kids outside. And you know, that's just my two cents.
All right. Well, thanks very much for your call, Mark. We appreciate it.
Okay. Thank you.
Any comments about Mark's comments?
I think Mark's right on. I mean, if you can't pronounce the ingredients, then you probably shouldn't be eating it.
Yeah, and there are lots of efforts going on in the state about getting kids outdoors. The National Park Service and the Forest Service have a group together that works on offering free and low-cost opportunities for families on a regular basis. They schedule they offer a calendar at their website. I believe it's Get Outdoors Alaska or Alaska Get Outdoors. You can find out lots of opportunities to get kids doing fun things outside.
All right. Another phone call. Alex, you're on line one.
Hi.
What can we do for you?
Yes, I just wanted to say something about meats, vegetables, and fruit. I found that if you can just limit your diet to meats, vegetables, and fruit and get rid of all of the wheat that people eat, you would find that you can lose weight very fast, and you can make your food very tasteful by topping your meats with fruits instead of using a starch on your plate.
So that's your approach to cutting calories?
It is, and it's the type of calories that you're eating is what I think is the best part about it.
Yeah, I guess I guess I'm wondering that if you couldn't eat enough meat, I can understand how it might be hard to eat a lot of fruits and vegetables, particularly vegetables, looking at caloric density. But boy, you could sure eat a lot of meat and get a lot of calories.
Well, if you just stick to maybe chicken for a while, and then, mm-hmm. and then personally, that's how I found that I lost a lot of weight. Just staying away from all breads mm-hmm. and crackers. Potatoes, mm-hmm. anything that's white especially. You don't always have to have a starch, and a lot of people feel that you have to have a starch on your plate right. in order to have a decent dinner.
Maybe by doing what you're doing, you ate less total amount of food over time?
That's a possibility. I still felt like I ate quite a bit, and I was still full. It was just cutting out the starches is what really did it for me.
Okay. Well, thanks for sharing that with us.
Thank you. All
right. Tell us a little bit, Carol, about the numbers. We've talked around and we've commented and we've made the comment that we're having an obesity problem. And one of the things I've really appreciated listening to you today is I haven't heard anything from you about, this is my belief, this is my what I think is right. You're giving me all kinds of facts. We went out and studied it. We got the numbers. We looked at it. And that's kind of what we try to get across in this program is let's see what the evidence shows. So why do we know we have a problem with obesity? What numbers, and how did we get those? And then bring us up to date.
All right. Well, nationally, they're able to track and monitor overweight and obesity in kids for the last 3-plus decades. In Alaska, we started our surveillance systems. Our monitoring doesn't go back that far, and we're not as comprehensive as at the national level. But what our program was able to do back in 2003 was partner with the Anchorage School District, where they collect height and weight during routine health screenings. School nurses do this. And they were entering it into a database, into electronic health record. And back in 2003, we partnered with them to take a look at what the data told us by extracting those height and weights out of the system, analyzing it, classifying kids into the weight classes. And we're able to monitor the trend. Turns out the Anchorage School District had information back to 99. And so we've been able to monitor that trend since then. And what we saw initially from 99 to 2003 was an exponential growth in the prevalence of obesity. Went up to about 38% of all kids in the Anchorage School District. Since then, we've been tracking the trend, and it's been slowly coming down. And it's statistically significant. We saw a decline to 36% of kids are overweight or obese in the Anchorage School District. And while that number is still way too high and we still have so much work to do, it also is showing that some of the efforts that we've put forward in partnership with Anchorage School District, Healthy Futures, and other agencies in the Anchorage Bowl area are making a difference. And that's part of what we do at the state is that evaluation component to show, like, are these efforts making a difference? And what is it about what we're doing? Is it healthy futures? Is it changes in the school food program? Is it more physical activity? Is it more health instruction? Is it PE 90 minutes a week at the elementary level that's making that difference? And so we work to tease that out. Recently, we just did a national publication looking at obesity prevalence in the Mat-Su and Anchorage school districts. We're able to combine that. And since 2003, we've shown a statistically significant decline in obesity prevalence. It's very small. It's a 3% decline, went from 16.8% to 16.3%. But we're really, really excited that that's happened. And we need to just continue to bolster the efforts that are going on in those two districts so that.
How about nationally? How are we doing compared with other states or national statistics? You know?
When we compare ourselves, we're basically right on with national, not higher, not lower, right on target with national.
So as you said, it's not dramatic, but it's not growing. It may be decreasing, and statistically significant says the likelihood of the numbers you're seeing happening by chance alone is not likely. So it's reassuring. Why? What's happened?
Well, two of the key pieces is at the elementary level, we've increased PE time from 60 minutes a week to 90 minutes per week. And then another key piece is health education. It used to be health education at the elementary level was embedded in the classroom curriculum. And now that is actually a pullout. And so kids are being pulled out and being taught health by a health specialist. And the nice thing about that is what happens is the kids view health as something that's very important because that's why they're pulled out of their classroom to learn about it. And they're taking those messages home and sharing it with their parents. My daughters have shared with me what a portion size should be for them because they learned it in the classroom. And it wasn't taught as an adult curriculum would be. It was taught at an age-appropriate curriculum or within an age-appropriate curriculum.
This is a time of tight money. And I think it makes it even more impressive that in this time that there has been a slowing and apparently a decrease in obesity. So the word is getting out there. Are the school districts able to meet this need for activity and education about nutrition?
This is actually a time when we're really concerned. Anchorage School District is facing flat funding, and you know, we know flat funding is really a reduction in funding, no matter what you want to describe it as. And the risk there is that health specialists will no longer be offered and that health will go back into the curriculum and become lost. In addition, that physical education will decrease. And I think it's really important to note the difference between physical education and physical activity. Physical education is going to teach the children the skills so that they can be physically active, even outside the classroom.
Okay. I have an email. This gets back to childhood and even earlier in infancy, and we haven't discussed that issue, so I think this is a good question. It says, I'm a new mom, just starting my baby on solid foods, and I'm sad to discover that many of the commercially available jarred food options have many added fillers and sweeteners, even when they claim to be natural. Has there been an established link between childhood obesity and baby food consumption? Anybody aware of that?
I'm not aware of any established length, but I think that comes back to, you know, Mark's comments about if you can't pronounce the ingredients on the list or you don't recognize them as foods, probably should look for something else to eat. I would like to say, though, this is an opportunity to continue breastfeeding. Initiation of breastfeeding reduces the chances of obesity. The duration, the length of time that women breastfeed, and the recommendation is for 12 full months. And to be an exclusive breastfeeder for the first 6 months is important as well. So as this new mom is introducing solid foods to continue breastfeeding, because that will set their baby up for the best lifetime health.
Is there any understanding why breastfeeding is so protective against obesity?
There are several theories. One theory I'm willing to share is the value of satiety. Babies who are breastfed learn to self-regulate, whereas if milk or formula is put in a bottle, parents really feel like the baby needs to finish, you know, X number of ounces, and they'll continue to force that food on the baby, and they don't get to establish their own society. Yeah.
So the bad news about breastfeeding is you don't know how much your milk, your calories, we should say, your baby's getting, and the good news is you don't know how many calories that they're getting. And that you, if you pay attention, let them self-regulate, we do better. So the corollary of that, if true, is we ought to let kids eat at their own pace as they get older. I see lots of toddlers who 18 months, 2, 3, 4 years of age are very, very picky eaters, often grazing, eat breakfast, then kind of graze around for a couple of days and or for the rest of the day. And what we're telling families is live with it. You know, don't expect them to have to sit down and eat dinner like you and I would like them to do, and that we get back to our natural rhythms about eating, so to speak. Brooke, you're on line one. What can we do for you?
I was wondering if your speakers were familiar with the very popular program, The Biggest Loser, where obese contestants compete to lose weight and often have dramatic results, and what they thought of the show, if perhaps they might think it was counterproductive to their goals by kind of perpetuating the myth or giving the impression that the only way an obese person can lose a significant amount of weight is to kind of adopt a very drastic diet and workout regime like the contestants on the program, when actually subtle changes over time can not only have great results, but be much more sustainable and more likely to be adopted. And just wondering what their thoughts were along those lines.
Good question.
I would say you hit the nail on the head when you talked about sustainability. I mean, you have these great results, and it seems like it's this wonderful fix to it. But let's start looking at these contestants a year down the road, 2 years down the road, and you start seeing the weight coming back. I've actually come across one of the contestants who was who did very well, and about 3 years later, that particular person looked rather large again. And it's great when you're in this controlled environment, but let's face it, none of us live in a controlled environment. We have to have real life experiences, and so the sustainability of the Biggest Loser program really isn't going to work for the average person.
Yeah, we don't know. I don't watch. I know what the program is. What we don't know is how many of those losers continue to have lost weight over time. And it could be that it's very successful, but we don't know that.
Right. And I just know a few people that seem to have the impression, they're fond of the show, but they seem to think that one of these days they were going to find the motivation to do something like that, when actually small changes would probably benefit them better, and they'd be much more likely to adopt it. And then once you get out there and get more active, you tend to keep it up because it feels good.
Yeah, I'll ask Cindy and Carol to comment, but my understanding is, again, the way we humans work is that we need success, and we're much more likely to continue with the program if we make long-term changes and see slow and consistent success rather than one big success, which is painful, and then we go off the wagon, so to speak, and get right back into old habits. And the reason for that slow change that I think you're alluding to, Brooke, is that it allows us to make these long-term changes much more successfully in any habit. Thanks for your comment.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you for your comment. We have another question here. Here's somebody who's really thinking scientifically again. It says, assuming that the kids complete the Healthy Future Activity Challenge, how do you know if it's making a difference in the levels of obesity in children, or that the kids continue to exercise after the program? This is kind of similar to what we were talking about. Are you guys doing any follow-up? Is there any nutritional education in the schools as well?
Well, there is nutritional education through, in Anchorage, through the health specialist, and it's really a developed curriculum. It's not just, here's our pyramid, but it's explaining the portion sizes. It's explaining the importance of balance. It's really a wellness program built into that curriculum. As far as long-term studies of the Healthy Futures Challenge, we're not designed for that. And so we don't have an epidemiologist on board, and we're not looking for those results. We do have anecdotal evidence that when kids are physically active, they're making changes in their life. We've had kids that have given up soda pop for a year, and that wasn't a message that we gave them. However, the message they received was, if you're physically active, you feel better. So they started getting physically active, and then they realized the food that was going into their bodies was the fuel to make them physically active.
Do we know from perhaps other programs around the country whether changing in physical activity levels in schools have led to more long-term success in weight control and changing exercise habits? Maybe Carol, you may know that.
Right. We build all of our programs on the evidence that's out there. And then we adjust things for, the unique landscape that we have in Alaska. Huh. So we don't have to prove that everything we're doing is working if we feel like we've got a solid evidence base behind us. And we feel like we do with Healthy Futures. We do know that when kids are physically active, we see cardiovascular improvements. And we expect to be seeing that with our kids in the Healthy Futures program, as well as kids in a comprehensive PE program.
We have a couple more emails, and I don't want to cut them short, but I also want to make sure we get touch base on a couple more issues here. There's an Alaska summit on this issue coming up. You want to talk about that?
Yeah, I'd love to mention that. We at the state facilitate the Alaska Alliance for Healthy Kids, and it's a group of concerned individuals and agencies who are working to prevent childhood obesity across the state. We're a statewide coalition. We are hosting a summit on September 16th and 17th. It is open to public health professionals, school professionals, as well as the public. And you can find out more about the summit at akhealthykids.org. It's only costs $75 to attend for the two-day conference, and we have a lot of great local talent coming to present, as well as some national speakers coming to present.
That link is also at our website on alaskapublic.org as well. So it's akhealthykids.org to get more information about that.
Yes.
Got another question here. The question is, why physical education is a daily class anymore? Is that something that's a national policy, just a state policy? Why have we backed off education in school?
There is no national requirement for PE. In the state of Alaska, we do not have a requirement or a mandate for elementary or middle school PE. We do require for high school graduation a one-credit PE or health class for graduation. So there really isn't a mandate when it comes to PE. And I think when there are budget cuts or there are issues about fitting enough activities in a school day, PE is often looked at.
I think you're also seeing, and this is across the nation, a focus on test scores. And so, you know, we're getting into another subject, but we're starting to educate for, you know, the tests and teach to the test. But what has come out now through the Institute of Medicine recently released a report that showed a direct correlation between physical activity and increased academic performance. So it's time that we started re-educating the policymakers so that they understood that cutting PE is not going to increase your test scores.
Prentice Pemberton is a medical a social worker here in Anchorage who has joined the Line 1 staff is once a month as providing a program that meets psychosocial needs in particular. And he has written in an email which addresses a slightly different issue. He says, obesity is often associated with depression, which makes getting started very difficult. Young people are especially vulnerable to depression due to the bullying, which leads to low self-esteem. How can we as parents and as community members best support young people who are already overweight and struggling with self-worth?
I think one of the things as a parent, and I am a parent, so I try to teach this to my children, is when you're at a community event, you cheer just as loud for that last person to cross the finish line as you do for the first person. Make sure that they know that they're successful for being there. And if that means that they're walking, then cheer them on as a walker.
And we encourage schools to have comprehensive anti-bullying policies in place and that they provide teacher training or staff training about anti-bullying. And that would include obesity and weight and health issues as well as other issues in the anti-bullying curriculum.
What things would you two suggest to parents who want to hear the message and make changes? How would you go about it? What would you suggest prioritizing?
Prioritizing. One of the easiest things is, you know, to volunteer in your classroom. To ensure that your school is participating in the Healthy Futures Challenge. It's an opportunity for you to be physically active with your kids. It's also an opportunity for your school to earn money for physical education equipment. In addition to that, when you start being physically active as a family, usually the subject of nutrition comes up, and so that's when you can start making, you know, the healthy choices and like we've talked about, you know, it's the baby steps. And so if that's eliminating sugar-free or sugar-sweetened beverages, then that could be the first step.
Carol, you have any comments?
It's just a lot of what we need to accomplish is looking at the community that we live within. And so parents who are trying to make a change might be more successful at their change if their community supports them. So if they're walking out the door, they have a safe park in their neighborhood, they go to their local grocery store, there's healthy food on the shelves. And so I encourage parents to get involved at their local and community levels to help make those changes happen. And as I mentioned earlier, the Alaska Alliance for Healthy Kids is going to be working on issues at a state level and at a local level. And so there might be opportunities for parents who care to get involved with the Alliance by going to akhealthykids.org.
We are fortunate, I think, like many Western cities, that we have outdoor resources that have been promoted and developed. I don't see this as being as obvious on the East Coast, and I'm trying not to be blind about this, but we have a coastal trail, we have lit cross-country ski areas, but there's been a movement, probably because of money, I don't know the reason, to get rid of sidewalks and other things that would promote more outside activity. So clearly, this is not just an individual issue, as Carol, you mentioned earlier. Would you all agree that we all need to be doing things throughout the communities to make activity more friendly?
We all have a role to play in making our community safer and healthier and a better place to live. And I encourage people to put that effort forward, because it can make a difference, and it will make a difference if people step up.
You also, if you look at it from a business standpoint, if you have a healthy community, you can then recruit some of the best people to work for you, because they want to raise their families in a healthy community. So it's good for the bottom line, too.
This is a big subject I'm about to bring up. We only have a couple of minutes, but I always am surprised at how much misinformation there is about food and diets and so forth. Carol, tell me if I'm wrong, but it always gets down to calories.
In the end, it's down to calories.
It's energy in and energy out. And food is either protein, fat, or sugar, which we sometimes call carbohydrates.
Well, and there's alcohol, too. It's a macronutrient.
Mainly carbohydrates. Okay, all right. My understanding is we hit sugar a lot, but fats are much more calorie dense. There's twice as many calories in fat, and that's one way to really be careful that I point out to my patients is watch the amount of fat intake that you're taking and point out where the fat intake is coming from. Is that helpful?
It's definitely helpful, and I think that's because some of those really high-fat foods, they're easy to eat a lot of them. A bag of potato chips is pretty easy to eat, and it's more calorie dense. It has more calories, you know, per serving than a piece of fruit or even a slice of bread would. And so I think focusing on fat is important. But when we really break down the changes in diet at a national level over the last 20 years, what we've really seen is an increase in the refined sugar intake. Okay. And we know that like teenagers are drinking 116 calories of sugar beverages a day on average that they weren't drinking 20 years ago. And so sugar beverages, I think, is a really clean, clear message we could give, is to just we need to get those out of our houses. So forth.
So what I'm hearing you say is, Dr. Woodard, yeah, you may be right, but there's so much more sugar being intaken that it overwhelms the fat issue.
Oh, the fat's important too. You got to do it all.
But we've managed to increase the sugar intake, even though the caloric density is less, to a point where it's a significant problem. Thanks for being so nice to me. All right, we're in our last, looks like minute and a half or so. Let's sum up. What are the important messages we want people to take away from here? Cindy, what are your important messages?
I think it's find out what allows you to be physically active. You described it earlier as what is fun for you, and don't be afraid to break it up throughout the day. 15 minutes is fine if that's what it takes to get started, but just go out and have fun, and like the slogan says, play every day.
And from my perspective, it is thinking about what you can do as an individual in your community to make a difference.
Okay. Well, listen, Carol, Cindy, thanks very much for taking the time to be with us today. It's been helpful and I think very good, useful information. We're going to be back next week, and we're going to be talking about, let's call it toxic anger. Prentice Pemberton's going to be joined by a special guest, clinical psychologist Dr. Bruce Pemberton, and they're going to be talking about how toxic anger can give us some difficulty with health, relationships, and well-being. Pat Yak is Chief Content Officer at Alaska Public Media. Kristen Platt is our web editor and engineer. Thanks for listening. I'm Dr. Thad Woodard. Have a great day.
Line One is a production of Alaska Public Media, which is solely responsible for its content. Views expressed are those of the host and participants and do not reflect the underwriters or KSKA. Learn more about Line One and listen online at alaskapublic.org. Life Informed. This is Alaska Public Media.